This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture. I'm Hezrel Ashraf. You've likely heard of or read Billion Dollar Whale, Tom Wright's account of OneMDB, the multi-billion dollar corruption scandal involving international fugitive Lo Tik Cho, better known as Jolo. But, you know, have you heard of the arrest of the super yacht Equanimity and who did it, right? Have you come across that story? It's perhaps the most highly sought asset linked to 1MDB, which was purchased by Jolo himself, allegedly using 1MDB funds, and purportedly had paid $250 million for it, which is around 1 billion ringgit. It can fit 22 passengers, 31 crew members. It's got a helipad. You get the idea. It's luxurious, to say the least. I thought I'd get the inside story on the super yacht. So I'm catching up today with Sitpa Selvaratnam, the lead counsel for the arrest of the super yacht Equanimity. She's also the author of the book titled The Arrest of the Super Yacht Equanimity. Sitpa, thanks so much for joining me today. And just as a disclaimer, as we record this, there's thunder going on in the background, which I think is the perfect setting. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hi, Hezrel. Thank you for having me on the show. Yes, wonderful thunder and lightning in the background.
Yeah, it's a good mood. It's a good setting for the mood. Yes. So tell me, you know, what does it mean to arrest a billion ringgit super yacht? I've never heard, you know, of an asset being arrested, let alone a super yacht.
That's a great question, Hezrel. The arrest of an object is really a strange concept. It puzzles most people, except people in the maritime industry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Of course, it does not involve handcuffs or chains and locks, but it does involve the detention of the ship. So the ship is not allowed to sail or to trade. Right. The authorities, maritime authorities, would not give her clearance to leave the place of her arrest. So she's technically under the custody and possession of the court that arrests her, and she's no longer within the prerogative of the owners to do as they wish with her. So why do we arrest a ship? To take security, Hezrel. It's an amazing privilege. Only maritime claimants have that, to arrest, to get a security for a claim even before judgment. So you arrest her, you keep her, eventually you get judgment, and then you can sell her, and the proceeds of the sale stand in satisfaction of that judgment. And it's only a small class of, close class of claimants, maritime claimants, that are allowed to arrest a ship, say, for unpaid crew wages. If you've got cargo on a ship and it's damaged, you can bring a claim and arrest a ship. Or if there's a damage between collision between ships, or if there's damage to the canal, as we've recently heard of, or a waterway or wall, those would give rise to a claim against the ship and the right to arrest, Hezrel.
And that, just to add to your point, right, to follow up, it is unique in the sense that you are arresting something before a judgment is meted out by a judge, which you wouldn't be able to do with a human being.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, you can't do that.
You know, maybe you can jog our memories, because it's been a while since, the 1MDB corruption scandal first hit the headlines. How did Equanimity fit into the investigation, right? Where were you looking to arrest this extremely expensive super yacht, which I believe has been renamed Tranquility?
Yes, she's now known as Tranquility. Let's rewind a little. Hezrel, you'd remember that about 4 billion or more US dollars left 1MDB over several years. And when DOJ, through their kleptocracy and recovery department, filed...
And this is from the US, right?
That's right, the DOJ in the US filed their recovery proceedings in 2016. They had traced monies through 32 layers of accounts to land about US$262 million into the builder of the Equanimity for Jolo's purchase of the yacht. So the money trail that led to the Equanimity originated from the 1MDB, and its purchase was definitely not for the benefit of 1MDB or the people of Malaysia. So it was therefore critical that we recovered as much of that money as was possible for the people of Malaysia. And if you're absolutely right, it was in excess of 1 billion ringgit that had gone out to purchase Jolo's vessel. And so the arrest and sale was a recovery action, Hazrul, for the people of Malaysia to get as much back as possible.
And when you say 32 layers of accounts, that sounds very like a complex operation. What do you actually mean? Are you saying that there are 32 transactions that involved the purchase of the yacht?
Absolutely. Hazrul, we had to break down what DOJ had done. They had done a magnificent job where we put it into a visual. And you would have seen the charts floating at that time of the arrest, and you'd see it in the book now. What it was that the monies went through in and out of different companies, different accounts that amounted to 32 layers, different jurisdictions, different companies, and it was meaningless and mindless inflow and outflow of monies.
Let's go to let's head to that point in time when you were actually approached to lead this case. How were you roped into this investigation? Former Attorney General Tommy Thomas approached you. What did that feel like? And have you dealt with criminal cases like this before?
Okay, so that's a lot in that one question. Yeah. I'll come to the feel like a little later. But Tommy approached me. He was my former partner, of course, and at that point in time, Attorney General. He approached me because the case involved maritime law, not because of the criminal investigations. By the time he came to me, the investigation had been done. And what was necessary was for me to fit the facts and the evidence already available to the maritime metrics to see if we could frame a claim that would stay and would succeed against the vessel to be able to arrest and sell her. So it's a purely admiralty claim, civil admiralty claim when it came to me. I had plenty of that kind of skill. I did not require any criminal law background, criminal practice background.
Okay, that's an important distinction that even though the 1MDB corruption case is criminal, that your expertise is maritime and that the nature of arresting equanimity is about maritime.
That's right. That's
maritime right. law. And you know, what was that journey like? I mean, how did you feel? I mean, it's a huge task, lots of pressure. It's obviously high profile. It's in the headlines consistently, and so was the ship, right? When it was actually found, it was such a big deal. I remember seeing images of a former Prime Minister Tonem walking onto the ship. So, yeah, what was running through your mind for 9 months, right? You did this. It took 9 months to arrest the yacht.
To arrest and then sell her, it took 9 months, exactly. So you're so right, Hazrul. It was a big thing. It was momentous. It was the biggest shipping brief to hit Malaysia, not just because of the quantum of the claim, but the exclusivity of the superyacht, but because of the whole story behind her. And again, if we rewind, it was just after G14. The entire gaze of the country was on this this event. People were so engaged. They were questioning. They were supportive. But they were also demanding of accountability. And by that time, in August 2018, there had been rumors of the vessel being sighted in various places and then finally coming into Bali in early 2018. And so the public interest and the curiosity of just about everyone in the country was so heightened. And so what was so different about this brief was that there was so much scrutiny over what we were doing. Even the media would want to know, how is the sale going? What's the cost of maintenance? What next? And can you tell us the highest bidder? Just no end of people wanting to know. And that was a good thing. It really pumped us with adrenaline to know everyone was interested in what we were doing. So the most, important of it all was the fact that there was tremendous pressure to succeed. We couldn't afford to get it wrong because we were doing it for our country, for our Malaysia. And it was a huge task, Hazrul. There had only been about 20 yachts in the world that had been sold secondhand at more than 100 million. year we were asking for $130 million US, and this is all US dollars. Dollars. So with a history of only 20 ever, and we were wanting $130 million US dollars, and it usually takes 18 to 24 months for the super yacht market to move a sale. And here we were trying to minimize our costs and, you know, get it out off our hands as soon as possible. Finally, we got it done in less than half the time, in 9 months, right? And the billionaires who were able to purchase this, who had an interest and the appetite, well, there were less than 100 in numbers who were, you know, even potential pool. And we had such a notorious ship to sell. Everyone was perceived to have this worry that Jolo might turn up and claim her. And that was, in a way, crafty. It was used to push down the price as much as possible. So how was that journey? How did it feel? It was it was a melting pot of emotions, for sure. There's a lot of frustration and anxiety and tension and the stress of it. But Hezril, there was so much joy, so much joy from serving the country. And so I would call it the greatest point of my professional life.
And was time a factor in trying to arrest and sell the yacht? I mean, I guess let's break it down, right? How long did it take to arrest the yacht, and how long did it take to sell it?
Right. So when I was instructed to prepare the arrest papers, the sailing into Malaysian waters was very imminent. So I literally turned around the papers, broke down the details, put in the papers within 48 hours, and we waited. And then diplomacy had to take its course for the vessel to be brought in from Indonesia to Malaysian waters. So finally, probably about 10 days later, she was arrested. So let's put it at 10 days. We had a hearing before the judge, and what would normally take about 15 minutes to get an order for arrest took 2 hours because of the scrutiny, because of the levels of 32 levels. It was such an unusual and rare sort of claim to be leveled against a ship and a super yacht at that. So we did all that, and that would be about 10 days or at most 2 weeks, I would say. And then was the laborious job of trying to get all the papers right, all the dots and ticks and everything else, you know, done, so that the meticulous process of passing good, clean title to a purchaser was actually maintained and achieved. And so the final sale occurred about 9 months later.
And was the time factor in the initial, you know, leading up to the arrest, was that a concern for you that, you know, okay, you had to, you know, you wanted to complete it within 48 hours so that you could arrest the ship as soon as possible? You know, were you worried that it would escape the Malaysian authorities and somehow end up under, another country's jurisdiction, or if it could have been stolen? Was security a concern?
Absolutely. Throughout, it was, Hezril. First of all, it was unbelievable that she finally actually docked in Port Klang. So that was an amazing moment to see her actually there. Yeah. Physically, we had arrested her. That was just point one.
Yeah, because it was in Bali, you said. Bali. That's where it was actually sighted.
Correct. Yeah. And then over the remaining months, there was very, very high level of security. There was 24/7 surveillance just to make sure there's no sabotage. There was, you know, not undue interference. Yeah. And she was kept safe. That was absolutely right. That was what we did.
All right. Well, on that note, we do need to go for a very quick break. I'm catching up today with Sitpa Selvaratnam, the lead counsel for the arrest of the superyacht Equanimity. She's also the author of the book by the same title. And we're talking about her experience arresting as well as selling the superyacht, which was a key asset involved in the 1MDB corruption scandal involving international fugitive Joe Low. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Hezra Lashraf, and today I'm catching up with Sitpa Selvaratnam, the lead counsel for the arrest of the superyacht Equanimity. She's also the author of the book by the same title, The Arrest of the Superyacht Equanimity. And I'm getting the inside story about her experience arresting and selling the superyacht, which was part of the 1MDB corruption scandal involving international fugitive Joe Low. You know, I did forget to ask you this question. It should have come earlier, but I'll ask it now. Well, two questions. Did you get to see the yacht, first of all?
Yes, okay. Of course.
I mean, what did you feel? Describe to us that moment, right, when you actually walked in and viewed it. And I assume this is after it had been arrested and had docked in Port Klang.
Hezril, that's quite naughty. You're taking the wind out of the sail of the pleasure of reading my book. But I can tell you this much. Okay. It was simply awesome to step onto her. She was just so special. She was, of course, super luxurious. But it's more than just the frills and the fancies on her. Yeah. It was the fact that we were getting her. Ours, we are getting her back. She was here. It was unbelievable. And so the fact that it actually did happen, not a dream, it was indescribable joy.
Sitpa, you've given us a breakdown of the timeline that it took you actually a mere matter of days to actually arrest the superyacht, and that the longer part of it was actually selling Equanimity. How difficult was the process like from a legal standpoint? I mean, were there a lot of hoops to jump through given that the nature of the asset, it's of a global nature?
Yes, Hezril, it was very difficult. You can break it down in many different angles. Mm. From a legal standpoint, the ownership claim itself is rare in Admiralty. In Admiralty arrests, you arrest for all sorts of things, but rarely on an ownership claim. So that was rare to begin with. And then it's even less common for an ownership claim to be based on a breach of fiduciary duties. And here we're talking about the 1MDB company's directors' breach of fiduciary duties and the knowing receipt of funds. This is by Joe Low and his companies, and tracing that claim and that follows the monies into the ship. So it's absolutely a rare, unprecedented sort of claim, and it was very challenging until it became very clear, breaking it in parts, and then it looked, crystal clear. Mm. We've got a great claim. But until that was done, it was actually something that was out of the box in many, many ways. Very rare, very unprecedented. Yeah. So we would prepare the case expecting it to be challenged by Joe Low because we have the burden of proof. We are the claimants. We are asserting the claim. It didn't turn up, but we still had the onus of establishing to court with documentation to support the tracing to 32 layers through numerous jurisdictions. And we have those supporting documents with the mutual legal assistance of various countries through bilateral treaties, multilateral treaties. So in the end, we put them all together, substantiated the claim. But it was tough. It was tough. And then we also had the responsibility in law to make sure that the buyer who's purchasing this super yacht for more than 100 million US dollars actually had good title, clean title, free of Jolo's any of Jolo's purported claim. So we had to adopt the right processes, undertake the right systems, invite tenders, have the vessel appraised, keep the vessel's appraised value confidential. So many different technical requirements. Yeah. And then, of course, going to court to get relevant orders for management, for brokerage, for evaluation, to approve an order for sale, to get judgment, to vary the orders because it took that much longer. We learned that the traditional ways of doing it didn't really work for the super yacht. So we had to, again, think out of the box, be creative, go back to court. All of this was extremely challenging. Again, unprecedented. Yeah. So we were challenging ourselves out of our comfort zone all the time. Multiple hoops, Hezril, that had to be gone through to get this vessel sold.
You said ourselves because you were assisted by a team of lawyers, right? To arrest and sell the yacht. What was that experience like, right? To work together with this group of lawyers, I imagine it made a huge difference to be able to file something in court within 48 hours to arrest equanimity.
Hasrul, that is probably the single most important factor in the success of this equanimity saga, right? I dare say that we had the strongest, most clever, kindest, and most cooperative team, or at least the equanimity brought the best out of us all. And I say that half in jest, but in all seriousness, because it speaks volumes. The equanimity equaled the country. So we had a common goal and focused all our energy in solving every problem, every hurdle that came our way. And Hazel, to me, it was a multiracial, multi-faith team. It was a real Muhibah New Malaysia team. And that gave us all a sense of belonging, a sense of unity that made us happy from inside. Even as I speak of it now, it rekindles that joy. So whatever difficulties were on the outside didn't matter, because we were united, we were happy, and we were going to find a solution for this. And that's how I think we managed to find creative ways to sell this vessel in record time, 9 months, at a whopping big sum of 126 million. Hazel, I'll add this here. A lot of people talk about, it was only half the price.
Yes, I was going to bring that up. So initially, Joe Lo had paid around $250 million, correct me if I'm wrong, for 202 to buy that yacht, and you sold it for just over $100
million. $126 million.
I mean, what would you say to people, you know, who keep bringing that up, that the fact that it's, you know, only half the price, that you managed to, that you sold it at a lower price than it should have been?
Okay, Hazel, thank you for asking it, because I want this to be understood. The vessel was purchased almost five years before she was sold. So every asset depreciates. What more a luxury asset that almost depreciates when you just sail out a showroom, you drive a car out of a showroom, and she's already fallen in price. What more a super yacht? And she had been run hard by Joe Lo with very little time to maintain her. So the appraised value, and this is totally professional appraisal of the value, the evaluation of her was at US $130 million. That is her market value in the condition we found her in. That valuation was done in October. So it's right after we had arrested. She was only worth $130 million. So we did very, very well to sell her at $126 million. With a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of sweat and blood. We did that. And we did it without having to spend on the commission for brokerage. So brokerage itself would have been $4 million. If we had waited a little longer, we would have incurred another $5 million in maintenance because she needed a super annual five-year maintenance, which would have been costly. Overall, we did really well. We did really well.
What did this case, I mean, mean to you? Obviously, it's a huge achievement. You've just touched on how you know, the team representing the team of lawyers involved in this case, you know, represented, I guess, as the best of Malaysia, right? A multiracial, a multi-faith group of people. But Joe Lo is still out there, and there are still ongoing court cases. So. The saga hasn't fully ended, so to speak. So in that context, what does the sale of equanimity mean to you at this point in time?
That's a deep question for me, because it was the greatest privilege of my life to be able to have served my country at a time when there was an environment that valued integrity and accountability. And to have been able to achieve it in 9 months, which was the quickest and biggest amount realized at that point in time, means a whole lot to me. Of course, it's unprecedented and all of that. But finally, what was so meaningful was the fact that it was for the country and we recovered it. There might be ongoing sagas on 1MDB, but the chapter on the equanimity is closed. We did it snappily, we did it efficiently, and we got the best for the country.
And what did that negotiation look like when it came to the sale of the yacht? Because as you said, you're only just $4 million under the market value, which is you know, a big feat to get it to that price. I mean, did it take longer to find a buyer, or did it take longer to actually, you know, negotiate the price of the yacht?
So, as I said, the sale was the hardest part. The arrest was, you know, simple in comparison. And the sale was difficult because of the paranoia in the super yacht industry, the Jolo notoriety. And so negotiations took a long time with various parties. We had to go do roadshows in Hong Kong, the team. We did it on our at our own cost, by the way.
Yeah, you did pro bono,
Yes, but the expense, yes, that's right. And the expense of traveling to Hong Kong was borne by us personally. My expense to London was also borne personally. And all that was to minimize the paranoia, to try and explain that we were not here to give her off for cheap, for dirt cheap. We had the means to hang on to her, to get the best market price. You would be getting title because of the judicial sale that involved the superior title. Just explaining the whole process so that the market confidence raised within the superior market itself took time. And that's what I mean by the sweat and blood, literally. And that's all set out in the book. It's not a long book, but it sets out all these little trials and tribulations that we had to go through.
And before we get to the book, when you say you travel to Hong Kong, you travel to London, you're saying that you went to see potential buyers in person?
That is right.
It was that necessary. You couldn't do it over a video call.
No, we could not do it over video call. And that was pre-COVID. Let's just get realistic again. Yeah. When the market expected you. And this, remember, we're talking about the elite, super elite billionaires who have to be wooed. Remember that. And pre-COVID, so physical meetings were necessary. We had a broker, but the book explains why it was necessary for us to actually get involved, roll up our sleeves and get down to the ground and speak to potential buyers, their brokers, their representatives, their lawyers. And that's what we actually had to do.
And the buyers could actually view the yacht?
Yes. We had two sort of phases of the sale. So the first phase was the typical public tender. You're given 30 days to put a sealed tender into court, and you needed to have a qualifying bid before you could actually visit the yacht, right? That didn't go through, and I discussed why, and that's one of the lessons that we learned, but it was a necessary phase. Then when we moved on to the second phase, which is a one-on-one private treaty negotiation, we clinched the deal much faster. Within 4 months, she was done. And that, of course, was serious buyers. The court made it clear we are not going to entertain any negotiation for amounts less than 100 million. That was a court directive. And so only the serious serious buyers were out to play at that stage.
Okay.
And of course, they had access. Before we actually visited the vessel, we had to have security features in place. There was Navy escorting the sea trials.
Yeah.
And so that unprecedented level of security and safety was taken.
And, you know, just looking at your book, The Arrest of the Superyacht Equanimity, Well, it comes out, so it's coming out this week on the 15th of April, but how did you decide what to include and what not to include? What did you face legal constraints when writing the book?
Hezriel, I did not face legal constraints at all, but I wanted it to be a narrative. I didn't want it to be a dry legal text about how one arrests a vessel and sells a super yacht.
Yeah.
So I wanted it to be infused with my experience. The Malaysian experience at that point in time was so different. I want to capture that moment, my exuberance, my joy in doing that. And so it is such that I put in 7 maritime lessons, and then I weave in my emotions, the team's problems we had, how costs were managed, the physical problems when we were blackballed and suppliers wouldn't offer parts to the vessel, and all the challenges are described as if you were walking the journey with us at that point in time. But I do it quite concisely. So the text itself is only 80 pages or so, but I also attach all the court precedents. So for anyone else who's interested in an arrest of a ship or a super yacht, they have the actual papers that we filed in court by large, not everything, but the predominant ones, the main ones are there attached in the book as appendices.
And before I let you go, Sitpa, how can people get a copy of your book?
They can visit my website. It's www.sitpasalvaratnam.com, and there you can place your orders there.
All right, great. And no other
proceeds are to charity, by the way.
Oh, okay, lovely. So they have to go directly to the website, and they can't go to a bookstore.
Not yet. We're working on that. Yes.
Okay, great. So, all right. So then you can head to www.sitpasalvaratnam.com to obtain a copy of your book. Well, you know, Sitpa, thanks so much for joining me today sharing with us your incredible story and feat.
Thank you very much, Hazrael. Such a pleasure and delight. Thank you.
All right. I've been speaking with Sitpa Salvaratnam, the lead counsel for the arrest of the super yacht Equanimity. She's also author of the book, The Arrest of the Super Yacht Equanimity. And we've been looking back at her experience arresting and selling the super yacht, which was a key asset involved in the 1MDB corruption scandal involving international fugitive Joe Lowe. If you missed any of today's conversation or previous Live and Learn episodes, you can check out our podcast on the BFM app or on bfm.my. Once again, I'm Hazrael Ashraf, and this has been Live and Learn on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.